Blog Talk Radio.
The Abolitionist Hour. I'm your host, Carl G. Call in at 646-716-8652. And don't forget to push 1. Broadcasting from the southern plains of the greater Midwest in Kansas City, overlooking the beautiful Kaw River Valley in lovely Wyandotte County, Kansas, and occupied Osage Indian Territory. So greetings, ex-prisoners, partisans, communards, brigadiers, and lumpen proletariat. This is the Prison Abolitionist Hour podcast, celebrating 370 years of anti-capitalist thought through reasoning and rebellion.
All right, we back on air.
Yeah.
All right. So you can contact us at KCIWOC, P.O. Box 414-314-304. Terribly sorry about that, folks. I kind of put myself in a little hurry. My print didn't come out right, so I had to fill in.
Folks, it's Kansas City, Missouri, zip code 64141. Kansas City, Missouri, zip code 64141. And if you didn't catch that box number, P.O. Box 414304, KCIWOC, man. Sorry about that, Carl. I just wanted to get that, make sure our friends write your letter. And donations. Right.
Hey, we got a notice in our mailbox from the post office, and they said if we don't pick up our mail more often, they're going to start charging us $1,500 additional a year for a bigger box.
I'll bet you they do. They don't give you a key where they give you a box. You must be getting a lot of mail, man. That's good.
Yeah. But we figured it out if we can. Every other day, if we catch it, you know, it won't. But you know, we just have a regular little box, and how many times we tug on it, yanking mail out is how I know if we got a good load of mail. Like five times, just like okay, we're busy. We got we just have to sort the mail right now. And. So it's been good and it really has served us well, and we buy a lot of stamps, and the post office likes us down there, and it gives us the opportunity to talk about prison abolition while we're in line in front of all those other folks, and because the IWOC is a prison union run by prisoners, and so. It's something that prisoners can participate in that's going on the outside. It's the way folks on the outside can help with the prison abolition cause. And organizing prisoners is something that started in the 70s. And there was a court case, Jones versus North Carolina. And it was determined that because of a lot of the RICO statutes and things like that, prisoners can be in a union, but prisoners can't operate as a union or draw funds, ask for donations or dues. And so it's interesting that you see the right to work language in Jones versus North Carolina all the way back in the 80s and 90s. And so now right to work is just, it's debt peonage, it's debt slavery, wage slavery. It's just, it's the absolute worst thing, you know, as far as union breaking and this whole idea that someone can be in a union and is not obligated to pay the dues is absolutely it's cruel and inhumane to the you know it's just it strikes a blow against the working class and there's nobody right now that knows more about working class conditions in prison. The rebels are coming out of the prisons. You know, during the Vietnam War we saw a lot of people, you know, go against, you know, the political system, Nixon and you know, McNamara
and Vietnam.
And now we're seeing, you know, 5,000 prisoners die. This is before COVID. That in the 70s if you died, the likelihood was a stab wound. 40 years later today, if you die, it's likely to be cancer. And so that's all the toxic industries have moved inside the prisons because there's virtually no OSHA regulations. Now we have found OSHA inspection forms, prisons, but most just like the Board of Nursing doesn't recognize prisoner illness. They're indentured. It's a caste system. The prison system is a caste system, and you're identified by caste by the time you're in fourth grade, depending on your test results, and or if you have two relatives in prison. Well, hell, I should be looking at like six life sentences by that metric. Here we are. You know, how old were you before you first visited somebody in prison? All these little things determines if they're going to build a jail cell for you. So, you know, I mean, it's something that I don't particularly like dangle in front of the state. You know, it's like, ah, ha, ha, you missed me. But in reality, I'm fortunate to only have done a couple months locked up. And like most of us, you know, one overnight's long enough. That's why so many people identify with IWOC on the outside is everyone knows somebody or has a relative that's been locked up.
Oh yeah.
So everybody's starting to understand how hard reentry is. Because one thing is you never know when somebody's going to get out. You say, oh yeah, they've got a sentence of X amount of time. They don't have a home plan set up. They'll make them stay in prison until their parole is up. And so this is very frustrating because, like in Missouri, you have a board picked by the governor, five people picked by the governor to run probation and parole over 32,000 prisoners in prison, and you know twice as many on parole because it's very easy to get picked up on a parole violation. You know, if you have it all depends if you're lucky enough to have a decent parole officer, but if you got one that's got a grudge, and there's a lot of them, just like police, there's a lot of police that have a grudge. You can say, yeah, there's some police that's never shot somebody or the police never killed somebody or tortured somebody. But you get certain authoritarian type of individuals that are attracted to these positions. You don't find a social worker joining a police force to say, hey, you know, I want to change the police from the inside. I mean, that's just not going to happen. The police are a state inside a state. They have their own medical plans. They have their own pension plans. they operate completely independent of the citizenry. And so the problems we're having in Kansas City right now is we're preparing for 2,000 homeless people to embark on the city who's never camped in the winter. This is a challenge every year in Kansas City. We've got evictions like crazy. And all the new apartments being built are luxury apartments. So you're looking at $1,800 a month. Now how can you pay $1,800 even splitting a place at minimum wage or part-time work? Because how do you explain where you've been for maybe a decade or even just a few years? Because after once you're locked up, after 2 weeks, the outside is completely forgotten. And you're entering a world of people that you don't want to look at, people you want to talk to, and you certainly don't want to hear them. And it's non-stop, virtually 24 hours a day of just noise and heat and lack of sunlight, lack of fresh air. And somehow media is able to overlook this and convince everybody that these guys are hanging out on the farm with their feet up in the air. You know, there's no good prison. And the only way we can face the situation with climate change, climate disasters, climate disruption, and we're seeing it around here with the flooding. The only way we can combat that is to get everybody out of prison. We need everybody on board. Everybody counts. And we just have to have that, we have to have that movement of prison abolition to do away with prisons so that they're forgotten. And you know, this thing like these old prisons becoming museums and tours and this stuff. And the one in Jefferson City, I was never more happy that there was a tornado. It was the first tornado to hit Jefferson City. And it just plowed the old prison walls. We just laid over where the old death house was, you know? And it's like, wow, if you can see it, if you can see it, you can make it happen. You know, act of nature, you know, act of rebellion. We'll take every gain we possibly can to see these walls come down. And so Mike, have you ever heard of meal loaf?
What is it?
It was meal loaf. This is the thing that you had a governor in Kansas named Brownback.
And, Oh, yeah.
He came up with meal loaf. And they started basically started feeding prisoners dog food in prison. Well, Aramark has the concession for Kansas prison. And they started, so the chicken and the beef and the pork came in as not suitable for human consumption. That was stamped on the box. And so these prisoners are seeing this. Well, so people are like, prisoners are like, we're not eating this. And so they would take this, they began taking the scraps of what the prisoners refused to eat. And they put them in loaf pans and added some oats, you know, rice or this and that. And making a loaf, and then that's what they started feeding solitary. Prisoners in solitary.
Yeah.
Now this has expanded to the, because everybody's on lockdown because of overcrowding. Very few prisoners actually have their own cell. They're usually like day rooms with like 20 bunks in them. And that's a lot of your solitary confinement is also like that. So if someone's, you know, being threatened of rape and assault, they're put in with the snitches. And so the prison guards, this is what is really, you know, it shows that just humanity has lost all purpose. These prison guards will actually play games, and they'll get together and have beers and stuff with their buddies, and they'll plot. And sometimes you'll have like a nurse married to a prison guard. And there was this one prisoner that was writing the San Francisco Bay View. And this was SCCC, the South Central Correctional Center in Licking, Missouri. It's south of Rolla, Missouri. And the nurse was quoted as saying, I'm doing God's work. And the last time I heard from that prisoner, and I didn't know he was writing out there, but you know he was on my list of prisoners I wrote. But the last time he wrote back, the absolute brutality of the treatment, where he was moved overnight from one prison. You know, gave him like 10 minutes to pack everything. All of his property was destroyed. Never made it. They sent him down by the death house in Bon Terre. So this is part of the abuse. Is you have like ex cops that have transportation contracts with prisons, and so they're just driving. They can just drive virtual circles. Once they got a prisoner loaded up, they don't necessarily have to, you know, have to have them there in the next prison in 12 hours.
Yeah. I've had a buddy who really was being moved from somewhere in Texas to up here in Kansas, and he spent like 4 days in the back seat of a van, you know, with shackled. You know, he said it was horrible. And he said it's just like, you know, they stop when they want to and they pick up when they want to, and they just don't. It was a horrible experience for him. He contacted me later and told me about it. It took him like 4 days, 3-4 days to get up here. You know, that's crazy, man.
Hello? Am I still with you? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we're on.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. I've heard some stories where if they need to go to the bathroom, they have to go to a sheriff's department, someplace that has a jail.
Some crazy things they do to them, and he said it didn't make any sense. I mean, half the time, why they were, you know, zigzagging their way to Kansas, they would stop off at county jails and stuff like that, and it was crazy. Let's see. I want to put this. You mentioned this song, "Gone Wild Over Me." I have that. It's by Utah Phillips. I'd like to play that, and then maybe you can tell a story about this song or something. Okay, I'd like to play that. It's only 2 minutes.
Okay.
Another one of T-Bone Slim's songs. Play go wild, simply wild over me. Although I've never done them harm that I can see, I'm as gentle as a lamb, but they take me for a ram. They go wild, simply wild over me. Oh, the cop, he went wild over me, and he held his gun where everyone could see. He was breathing rather hard when he saw my union card. He went wild, simply wild over me. Then the judge, he went wild over me, and I plainly saw we never could agree. So I let the man obey what his conscience had to say. He went wild, simply wild over me. Then the jailer, he went wild over me. When he locked me up and threw away the key. Oh, it seemed to be the rage to keep me in a cage. He went wild, simply wild over me. Now they go wild, simply wild over me. I'm referring to the bed bug and the flea. Oh, they murmur in my sleep. They disturb my slumber deep. They go wild, simply wild over me. Will the roses grow wild over me? when I've gone into the land that is to be. When my soul and body part in the stillness of my heart, will the roses grow wild over me? Well, and God, he went wild over me. When I knelt beside the throne on bended knee. When the angels heard me yell, they shot me down to hell, but they went wild, simply wild over me.
That's not a very pretty picture. Tell us about that story a little bit.
Okay, well, the T-Bone Slim, he was artistically, he was probably the most prominent artist that came out of the IWW. When you see that the labor movement internationally took over the surrealist movement, there's a lot of these wobbly songs are about catastrophes, and they're basically making light of it. But what was going on by the early 1920s was the Palmer raids, and they rounded up about 10,000 labor organizers and anti-war organizers. And because the socialists and the anarchists were very, very closely entwined for 50 or 60 years. And there was a lot of loss to profit, to capital, over the eight-hour workday. And so World War I was a war against labor, where you saw in some countries, 50% of the labor force was killed off either by war or following the Spanish flu epidemic. So in Germany, is World War I is where you saw the Nazi SS begin to organize violence at an industrial scale. So after World War I, the officers, it was the German officers that went after labor organizers, and many of them in Germany were assassinated. So, you know, we can see Rosa Luxemburg and these folks. So if you look how the United States had always worked with the fascists in the 20th century, and there's always been a connection, even going back to Andrew Jackson's treatment of the Cherokee and removing all the tribes in Oklahoma and Kansas, there's this. It's imperialism is always in the Constitution. They've, from sea to shining sea, they've always intended to use the Roman model of Pax Americana. And what we see now is Pax Romana. It was during Rome. Now it's Pax. So when they invade other countries, they're on native soil, is how the Americans see it. Raytheon sees this, that the whole world is theirs. And so the anti-capitalist movement at the first part of this century really struck a blow to capital that they've never recovered from. And so there were these free speech riots or free speech demonstrations, and there was a thing called windmilling, and they would get on a soapbox and they would say fellow workers, and then the police would be there to arrest them. And this was going on in Kansas City, where the first major general strike in a string of general strikes happened in Kansas City in 1918. We had five IWW offices in Kansas City at that time, and they organized industrially, so they were able to speak to garment workers, which there were like 25,000 garment workers in Kansas City at the time. All these old red five-story factories were all dress factories and things like that.
Yeah, now I want to interrupt you. I heard that. I would used to go down, listeners who go to Kansas City, down on the, they call it the West Bottoms, I think, and there was a garment district up in up the hill, in the I don't know what neighborhood that would be. It seems like it's around Maine or something. It was up the hill, still a garment I worked for a guy. It was a really small thing. It was really a dumb job. And it was, he made a living out of selling, this would have been in like 1980 or something. He made a living selling the, it's called pillow. And it's the stuff that they put inside your coat. It's just like the stuffing, only it comes in. That's what he did. And it was still there. And his father had ran that business. And he was an okay guy, this guy, but he was still a capitalist nonetheless. But he would tell me that this place that he had, his father had it, and it was he would describe to me what his father told him about the years when I guess I didn't realize there was a garment worker section in Kansas City, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But there was. That's amazing. You know?
Yeah. There was an underground railroad that came through Kansas City and ended up in Wyandotte. And those people who left the South, and then there was a migration of black folks in the 1940s. So it was still related to cotton is the way I've been told. It was, they were still keeping black folks close to the cotton. I remember as a busboy at a hotel when I was 15, 16 years old, the garment workers were still having conventions. It's not uncommon to find like little union pins that you can't make out what the initials and things are, but they you still see them at garage sales and things. Just like we don't realize prisoners were unionized in the 70s, that we had a large labor force that was unionized by the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
The efforts to break labor, it appears like they did it by themselves, but that's not the case. Some of the great labor organizers in the U.S. were lynched, like Frank Little, Flores, Ricardo Magone died in Leavenworth. That was the first newspaper to cover peasant land rights, black civil rights, immigration rights, labor rights. It was printed out of Leavenworth. Henry Ford.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, Henry Ford went to Leavenworth to see the library. They had a library of 6,000 books in Leavenworth. And Henry Ford said, none of my cities are run this good. That's what he said of Flores Magone. And, of course,
they used the American Legion and the Ku Klux Klan. I think Frank Little, it seemed like I read in the American Legion, they were used in the Northwest all over the country as vigilante mobs that would go after labor organizers, the IWW people. I think Frank Little was lynched by the American Legion. I can't remember. But, I mean, it was a pretty tumultuous time. Someone told me that was in the aftermath of the Red Scare that came after World War I. Does that sound right to you?
Yes. Yeah. That was yes. Yeah. They were in the Huns, the Red Scare and the Huns. And, yeah, that was the first wave of it. It was an attack on labor. So they created this alter ego of the labor movement essentially. And so this is when you started seeing radio coming in. And out of these parts is where you started hearing the message of anti-communism, against prosperity, or being, and you know, and you would see the anti-Semitic cartoons. And in like Henry Ford had a conspiracy book that he put in all the Model A's. Where a lot of these conspiracies that we've seen come back, you know, like the protocols of the Elders of Zion. And square dancing, which was actually a folk dance from the slavery period. Henry Ford promoted square dancing to counter jazz music.
I did not know that.
That talked to somebody from Illinois that's following, you know, square dance music and the white supremacist movement of the 1920s.
I did not know that. I knew he had, didn't he put out a newspaper and had his own little company town? I mean, Henry Ford, he looked up to Adolf Hitler and the Nazis. A lot of people don't get that. They don't get it at all.
Well, he had a son, Edsel Ford, and so around 1958, there was an automobile called the Edsel that flopped, and it was a big loss. And they said when the invading armies got to Normandy, and they lifted up the hoods of the truck of the German army, it said Ford Motor Company, Dayton, Ohio.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a comforting thought. Getting killed, you can fight your way to Europe, and you find out Ford Motor Company is running the trucks or the engines. What were the engines? I don't know, but that's crazy. That's a seldom known story, I'll tell you that, Carl. That's sick.
Oh, yeah, I mean, to this day, Ford, you know, Ford Foundation and some of these that follow, you know, you look at who the donors are of a lot of these NGOs doing work on the ground. And they'll show up and lay out their platform, their program, and then they just disappear and just leave all the grassroots movements, you know, just starting from scratch again.
Yeah.
And then, so then you'll have the media say, well, so much for Occupy movement, you know, when it was the state, you know, local police working against, well, like 20,000 camps or 20,000 demonstrations in towns and cities in the U.S. that lasted for 6 months at least.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's always this, it's always going to come back up. The discontent of the masses is just barely under the surface. But we're starting to see
people are saying that about climate change. People are saying that 16 to like 25-year-olds are froze in time because they feel like it, and it's not a good thing, you know. I mean, they don't know about their future and stuff, and they're sort of. There's a mentality among many of that age group to. Because it's like, well, it's like, what is it? You know, what the fuck? You know, what future do we have? And I don't think they get the thing about being as. I think, and I'm not talking down to them. I'm just saying that you got to stay. You got to keep out there, stay active, and do things. Like whether it's organizing prisoners or there is a thing about. I'll tell you what. We were driving from up here in North County, Jefferson County, down to Lawrence. I had been down there for a year, and it was a big deal. We had to go to a doctor. it was a big deal, and we're going down the road, down the highway, and we got on the part in Jefferson County and Douglas County, Kansas, share the massive landfill. And normally you could go down there and you wouldn't even know it was where it was at, because it's on a hill range with trees all over it. But in this year since I've been down there, they moonscaped the top of this big hill and cut all the trees off of it. And there's all these buzzards, you know, birds of prey flying over it. I'm talking like dozens and dozens of these birds flying over the landfill that you can see now with the eye. It's horrible. They cut all these trees down. Hey, I think we got a caller. Let's see. Let's get him on here. Hold on. It was terrible. I mean, I could see that, how the young people would have that attitude.
Hello.
Let's see what we got. You're on the air with Carl G.
Hi.
Caller. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Joe Wobb from Kansas City.
Hey, Joe Wobb.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, I tell you what,
sorry,
Carl is here.
I'm moving some mulch to the backyard, trying to get it ready, just kind of build up the soil and stuff. Hey, what was I thinking about? It was, you were talking about Henry Ford and the square dancing stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, it just reminds me of, like, you know, I learned, you know, they tried to teach us square dancing in elementary school and stuff like that. It reminded me of, like, how some things just suddenly become tradition. And I remembered how I had never in my life had I ever heard of Black Friday until, like, 2008 or 9. But suddenly on, like, every news channel, they were talking about, well, the day after Thanksgiving is traditionally known as Black Friday.
And we're going...
Sorry, I had to laugh. I'm listening. I'll go ahead. I'm sorry.
You're good. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's maybe Black Friday has replaced square dancing. Is that what you're thinking?
No, I don't know. It's just like, I don't know how some things become tradition, and I'm sure it was a thing before, like, I heard about it when I was in high school or something. But, like, you know, it wasn't a thing. It wasn't a thing in Topeka, Kansas, I can tell you that. Like, you know, maybe at Macy's in Chicago or something, Black Friday was a big deal, but it wasn't like a holiday where it was your civic duty to prop up the economy.
Right.
Yeah, and we've seen that with COVID, where Fox News and some of these channels were saying it's your duty for old people to die for the economy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
it's
not our job to die for the economy. It's our job to let the capitalists worry themselves to death.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, I remember when there was a convention at Lake of the Ozarks, and there was these big airplane hangars, and they had like a caller, like an auctioneer, and he would call out these square dance songs. It was basically the first karaoke, really, except you just had, as long as you had an auctioneer, you could have a square dance. And yes, by then, so they have like a jukebox, and you just push the button on the jukebox, and next song would come up, you know, backup track, and he would just, and I can't do it. It's almost a type of yodeling. It's some people can do it and some people can't, but most people can't. But it's kind of a difficult thing if you've ever been to an auction. And there was some old, and when people talk about like good country, this and that and this and that, a lot of it was just like instrumentals. It's like, don't even talk. And then it ultimately became songs about trucks and beer and mama. So there was all these like colorful dresses, almost, like satin and white cowboy boots and white cowboy hats. And just, I think on several times I've seen like hundreds of people doing, square dancing in the afternoon where it's 80, 90 degrees outside and they got the fans blowing and, trying to keep the humidity out of the barn. And these, I'm just like, that was the point, like Johnny Cash and Bobby Bear was making in the mid-50s. Like, all these people are on drugs. And Bobby Brown had a song called Quaaludes Again, because he would play these Motor City towns up in Detroit and stuff, and they would throw pills on the stage as a tribute. But back to square dancing. I mean, it absolutely makes no sense. I've never, we've often seen fads maybe come back or a story written on them, but I've not seen PBS in much time or Ken Burns. I don't expect us. They're going to dig up any square dancing heritage too soon. Or be in a hurry to dig deep. I mean, it's just like, put a fork in it, it's dead.
Yeah, anytime you watch some period piece from like Regency era England or something like that, they're going to have, they're going to be these scenes, these like courtship dances at balls. But like, Where is the line from there to the United States? Like, it didn't. I don't think it.
It didn't make the jump.
Yeah.
It did.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes for great. It makes for great theater. But
right.
I mean, I see some. There was a band I used to follow out of like Central Arkansas or something. They were called Mountain Sprout. I'll give a shout out to Mountain Sprout. They had a song called "Cleaning Out the Ditch." I think that was the first time. But yeah, they would go out. And their fans would like clog dance, like the Jed Clampett Stomp from Beverly Hillbillies. I tell you, I'd rather talk about anything other than prison torture. there's not much of anything that pisses me off more than than state violence.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And so we kind of get off topic a little bit because it's so dark and it's so miserable the way we treat human beings in this day and age. I don't think the Wobblies or the United Mine Workers, any of those labor organizations in the 1930s would ever imagine it would come to this again. But it's like 1911 all over again. You can just do a Google search of 1911 and start reading about things. And one of my favorite stories was Ezra. Ezra Pound, the poet, became a fascist. Wound up becoming a fascist, but he wrote this poem that was there was nothing like it in 1911. There's Stravinsky was writing concertos and symphonies using dance from the East and the Near East, and riots were breaking out. And of course, Wagner was performances, people were going nuts. And so it's not much different than what you'd see with pop stars, except like Stravinsky, he just quit. You know, like Stanley Kubrick, you know, he got threatened after he Clockwork Orange. That he, you know, he had to hide out for several years, and then he came back doing a period piece. I can't think of the name right offhand, but it was just he actually made his own lens that would reflect candlelight. So a lot of his indoor scenes were actually done, and the atmosphere was as close to candlelight as you can get on screen. But yeah, so Stravinsky, you didn't hear much of him, and because it was an awakening. There was an awakening after the labor struggle for the 8-hour day, and that working people are entitled to their access to art and production of that art and the means of production at every level. Labor is entitled to all it creates, and just the idea that wage slavery, the actual words, you know, from Henry James saying "live as if you were free," it revolutionized American thinking, and in fact, a lot of times when the conservatives are accusing us of being Marxists, they should actually be blaming Henry James.
Oh, I think we lost him and he's back on. Hold on there. Sorry about
that,
Joe.
No, it's all right. I lost my train of thought and I was just going to go back to bed, but then I remembered one thing I wanted to mention was, you know, kind of back to Henry Ford and the Nazi Party, and actually I don't know what Henry Ford had to do with it, but apparently one of the first places where Zyklon B was tested on humans was at was in El Paso, Texas, at the border crossing.
Yeah, and there were Ford diesels at the death camps that was pumping. It's like on the
do you happen to know what they were using I guess it was considered a pesticide, but what were they using it in Texas for?
Delousing?
You know? Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, to kill bed bugs and fleas.
I'd see they would use it in the barracks or the bunks where they go.
Yeah.
And then it
had these quote unquote side effects.
Yeah.
Being death.
Do you think the nation, speaking of the South, Carl and Joe, do you think this TV clip of these Texas Rangers, cowboy hats, whipping a Haitian black people come trying to get into the country? Did you see that? It seemed to have shocked a lot of people. Did you see that?
Yeah, the Haitian refugees.
Yeah.
On
their I grew up around the mean Ozark hillbillies, and I remember living in this town, and the rednecks going around whipping the poor people like that one night. And this guy in my class, he had a landscape company, so he threw a lot of logs and things like that, did a lot of digging and stuff. And he waited for him one night, and I just got off work and I was down the street and I was in Eye View. And they came up to that car and this guy jumped out and he pulled this redneck off to straight to the ground, and his eyes did not clear up for 3 months. He looked like a raccoon. And you know, it's like every time I never say anything because, you know, you get a half of half of them drinking, they'll kill you. And they had killed people that I've known. But, you know, it was just mentally, by telepathy, I was saying, yeah, you got your ass whooped, didn't you? But I'll never forget that. And yeah, I knew a guy that waited for him with a shotgun, and he was I think he was a senior, and these guys were probably 22 by then. They were probably 3 years older than a high school graduate. But yeah, no. So when I saw that, it was just like, you know, there's no boundaries. They have no self control. And there's it's like a feedback loop, a negative feedback loop where they can storm the Capitol and shit in the hallways and not have to deal with any repercussions. You know, $1 million of bail money comes out of thin air.
Right.
And,
it's a
what do you think, Jim?
Yeah. It's a positive feedback loop. And, you know, back during the, you know, it had been mentioned several times during the Trump administration, you know, we were kind of going through this process of desensitization like they did in, you know, during the rise of the Nazi Party in Europe. You know, I mean, one thing you could say about us right now is that this is kind of like our Weimar Republic period. But you know, one thing I have to say is that, like, people who were shocked about those images of the Haitian immigrants, like, I don't really know what to tell you. Like, this stuff happens in and around prisons all the time. There are still chain gangs. There are still prisoners who are harvesting your food for you, you know, at gunpoint. This happens all the time. I don't know what's shocking about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's awful, but
I'm just saying, a lot of people saw that on the network TV. It's like they hadn't. I'm sure a lot of people haven't thought about it. I'm just sure that kind of a reaction.
Yeah.
The ambassador, the special ambassador, the envoy to Haiti, quit and demanded the head of the head of Homeland Security resign. And of course, you know, there was an assassination of the Haitian president recently.
Right.
So they were white supremacists that went after that president from the U.S. In fact, one of them actually had lived in Kansas City for a while. One of them that were arrested. If you love your freedom, thank the Haitian rebels. They crushed the French and the British and brought us out of the feudal period in 1804.
Absolutely.
You know, so I guess that's our message to the world. 1804 is coming. And, you know, it's the same way with the Maroons, you know, and the Jamaican Revolution. You know, they came, fought with the Seminole Indians. They helped develop the Underground Railroad. They taught slaves how to run. You know, and you know, it's there's all these periods of the past that are converging today, that of lessons that they've learned. And the strength, you know, the strength to overcome and just the mental agility that is requires, you know, of accepting, yes, this is the way the world is. We have been lied to. We've been programmed in the public school system. You know, labor has the right to produce institutions of their own and to train people so that they're not little robots or little fascists or little Eichmanns when they grow up. There's too many damn authoritarians in this country.
I got to do this, Carl. Hey, Joe. Yeah, I know you might want to go back to bed here. We only got a couple minutes left. But I want to, I want to play, it's a little two-minute poem. You said you're, I guess, calling from Topeka. Well, here's a poem to our fair governor. I'm broadcasting out of Jefferson County. Here's a little poem Carl wrote about our governor, our former governor, Sam Brownback.
This poem's called Bushwhacker Sam. Sam hightailed back to Kansas in his JCPenney suit, wearing yesterday's misfortune like a crown. Once he had a future full of neoliberal schemes, which he spent like they were going out of style. Now he keeps on whacking brush on his 40-acre farm, searching for a shrine he never found, never proving capitalism was a blessing but a curse. The counting cash was worth the selling out. 'Cause he's a preacher, he's a banker, he's a cowboy with a canker, riding shot off every lot on a trail of broken homes. He's a real-life carpetbagger, gun for hire with a swagger. Bushwhacker Sam, you locked us up, now we'll burn those prisons down. He has tasted good and evil with Jeff Sessions and Bill Barr. He's traded your tomorrow for today, running with his devil Don, dancing on your scars, losing all the folks along the way. But the world keeps right on churning, not more better, far more worse. All he ever gets is fatter every day. From the foreclosed farmhouse shutters to the rolling of the hearse, the counting cash was worth the selling out. 'Cause he's a preacher, he's a banker, he's a cowboy with a canker, riding shot off every lot on a trail of broken homes. He's a real-life carpetbagger, gun for hire with a swagger. Bushwhacker Sam, you locked us up, now we'll burn those prisons down.
What do you think of that, Joe? Carl, that's a masterpiece.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. It's I hope to have more of them. I don't know if they'll always be about Sam Brownback, but the guy's a lot of trouble, and he's ruined a lot of lives. And his affiliations, his war against women, against LGBT people, he just runs with a very bad crew of capitalists. And he can't live in Kansas and get a night's sleep. That's all I can ask of the people out there in the Midwest. Is when you see him on a Harley in Topeka or something, just honk at him.
I'll flip him off.
Well, yeah. And you know, he's got a bunch of threepers. His security team. They're out of Olathe. Those rich white guys out of Olathe.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine them waiting on Sam Brownback hand and foot. I just don't see it. You know. Yeah. Maybe if they can get Chris Kobach and Ted Nugent to show up for beer and barbecue, they'll take it from their home.
We gotta close the show. And Joe, thanks a lot. I hope you liked that poem by Carl G.
Yeah, that was great.
We'll see you later.
That was great.
All right. We'll see you guys later.
Get fired to the prison.
All right, brothers.
All right.
Sign
off. 8 o'clock.
The bum on the rods is hunted down as an enemy of mankind. The other is driven around to his club, is feted, wined, and dined. And they who curse the bum on the rods as the essence of all that's bad will greet the other with a winning smile and extend the hand so glad. The bum on the rods is a social flea who gets an occasional bite. The bum on the plush is a social leech, blood-sucking day and night. The bum on the rods is a load so light that his weight we scarcely feel. But it takes the labor of dozens of folks to furnish the other a meal. As long as we sanction the bum on the plush, the other will always be there. But rid ourselves of the bum on the plush and the other will disappear. Then make an intelligent, organized kick. Get rid of the weights that crush. Don't worry about the bum on the rods. Get rid of the bum on the plush.